Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, December 31st, 2011. This is our New Year's Eve special discussion. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic is looking ahead to 2012, mobilizing to make it the start of the post-Obama era. Now, we have a two-part discussion today. The first half of the program, I'm very glad to welcome two members of the national slate, the new presidency slate of the LaRouche Democrats, and that will be speaking with us from Texas, Keisha Rogers from Houston. Welcome, Keisha.
Hello, Marcia.
Who's running in, is it the 22nd district, congressional district?
Correct.
And I'm welcoming from Massachusetts, is it the 4th Congressional District in and around Boston, Rachel Brown. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you.
So what, as I said, the reason I mentioned the post-Obama era is we are in, well, we are at the end phase of centuries of empire, the British Empire phase, we can call it. And so we're at a time of the most extreme danger, but the time of the most vital opportunity that we have to take. What's been underway, I hope you all listening today are very aware of it through the LaRouche Political Action Committee, is an international holiday campaign, as it says on the website, to stop World War III. And so in a second, I want to turn to Keisha or Rachel to introduce where we stand with this. But say the second part of our program then will be Jeffrey Steinberg from EIR, Counterintelligence, giving us a strategic update on the situation. So first, back to either Keisha or Rachel, let me start with this question. As the year closes, the old year closes, would you just restate, let's put it this way, why Mr. LaRouche canceled Christmas? Certainly not because he's a humbug kind of guy, but because the future of humanity is at stake. Keisha?
Yes, I'll go ahead and start off. Well, this is exactly clear here. What we're faced with is that we are faced with the end of civilization unless the population acts now to put a stop to the insanity of this thermonuclear war drive and the threat of an insane president who remains in the White House pushing this drive on behalf of his British imperial backers to bring the civilization to an end with this threat of mass extinction that we're seeing through this drive of thermonuclear warfare. So when Mr. LaRouche announced just a few weeks ago prior to the Christmas break that we were going to cancel Christmas. All holidays had to be canceled, Christmas, New Year, everything, because the stake of humanity was now being jeopardized and being threatened by the continuation of this president remaining in office. What we unleashed in that period throughout our entire organization in the United States, as well as represented in 5 different continents across the entire planet, was a mobilization of 1/5 across 5 different continents, where our primary objective over this past 2-week period has been a nonstop mobilization to put an end to this British imperial drive for war once and for all. And you can hear that we've been on a real mobilization because I don't have a voice right now.
Yes, I'm sorry. If you have to, I'm sure Rachel can take over if you strain, please do.
So just one of the things, and Rachel can fill in on some of this, is that across the various areas in the United States, we've had several banner rallies, banners over bridges, intersection deployments into the downtown financial districts where we would have large banners and choruses where the choruses would sing Christmas carols and spirituals and carols that would actually have the words transcribed into political lyrics like Handel's Messiah, and Rachel can report on this. We would sing, "Indeed, oh Mama," to the Handel's Messiah, Hallelujah chorus. But this, what we've been doing, you've also had reports from Mexico where they went out into the public square with a giant screen and projector, and they would play LaRouche's emergency address as well as the address that came from the president of Russia, President Medvedev, on the warnings of this World War III drive and some of the attacks that have been coming out from the United States and NATO and various other circles on Russia. In Europe, we've had our organizers there. They went to a cathedral that held about 15 to 20,000 people, and they got out what we had been distributing as hundreds of thousands of Mr. LaRouche's and Helga LaRouche's leaflet on Stop the Nuclear Holocaust and the warning of World War III drive. And this, because of this mobilization and because of our dedication and relentlessness in making sure that we're going to go into the new year with the end of this imperial drive toward World War III, stopping the insanity of this president by calling for his immediate removal with the 25th Amendment, the U.S. Constitution, or impeachment, or both, we made it clear to the population that we were going to be out no matter what, rain, sleet, shine, or snow, that the holidays were canceled, and the population had to join us in this mission if they wanted to make sure that we have a nation going into the new year. And so, yeah, I think I'll just start with that in terms of the mobilization. But all across, if people have had a chance to look at our at the interventions being presented and what we did presented on our website, on the LaRouche PAC website, what you'll find is that we had a nonstop mobilization all across the entire region of the United States, as well as in various other regions throughout the entire world. And with our mobilization, as well as the same patriotic leadership of a few military generals, retired generals, coming out in opposition to this war drive, we may have potentially set back the operation toward launching thermonuclear World War III for the time being. The question is, the only way that that's going to be set back indefinitely and stopped is by removing this president from the White House, and we're continuing to make that clear to the population.
Right, and while, since as you raised the breadth of this, and I know I've seen other written reports, not videos, but the videos are very vivid on LPAC TV. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's worth seeing again. South Africa had distribution of the warnings and the call to action. And, of course, many cities throughout Europe, Stuttgart, Berlin, Copenhagen, Stockholm. But, Rachel, do you want to add more to the breadth picture that Keisha just gave in terms of what all you've been doing in Boston?
Yes. Well, I think we, like many other people, were very excited about the idea of canceling Christmas once it was presented to us, because not just because people were tired of spending time with their family or something, but just because it's, I think people sense that the crisis right now necessitates a greater type of response, mm-hmm. that we can't react to things in business as usual methods. And so we went out and we had carols. We have a pretty good chorus. We have a very serious music program here in Boston, so the quality of our singing was very good, which really poses ironies to the people watching, which is, one, why are these guys, able to sing so beautifully, and at the same time say something that is maybe uncomfortable to hear, or something like that. It poses a paradox. So on one hand, we were ruffling some feathers, but on the other hand, what we found was that a lot of people were actually excited to have us, to see us out there on Christmas. And what we did was we'd go outside of churches. We also were at Faneuil Hall, which is like a historic site in Boston. And we actually got tons of support. You know, as soon as the door opened from the church, people would come out. We'd have the timing down perfectly, so we'd start singing the Handel Messiah song. And they'd open the door, and we'd break out with the Dump Obama, Dump Obama. And we've got the whole thing worked out. And it was, I think, pretty hard-hitting for everyone that saw it.
Good. I know the some of the sites in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol, which the church services are attended by some of the political strata, and that had a shock effect that of the LPAC teams that were able to hit in this way. Let me ask you, you're continuing this. Do you want to say something about that, about upcoming activity?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we're going to continue to do is, and I just got a report from some of my colleagues on the Slate who are not on with us today, just in terms of the mobilization to continue the high visibility deployments with the banners over the bridges, deployments, singing deployments and rallies in various downtown areas. And we are most definitely looking for people to join us in these deployments. I know what we're doing here is they're going to have a couple of New Year's Eve events in the town squares around the surrounding area, around Houston, in the Texas area. So we're going to go to these events with a sound car and ride through and play some of Mr. LaRouche's emergency address, as well as continue to get out in mass the leaflets warning of what Mr. LaRouche wrote about the, you know, stopping the nuclear holocaust. Because the most important thing about this mobilization is not just the essence of the high visibility deployments, that we're warning the population against it, and that we're going out in full force to stop this war drive, but it is what is expected of the population and the change in their thinking and their understanding about the reality that they face and how they're going to respond to that. And one of the things that we're doing to really set the example for what we could be accomplishing within the population as a real alternative to this insanity is giving the population a sense of the leadership that we're providing. And that really is, you know, developed and focused around what we uniquely represent as a slate, as a congressional slate, the LaRouche slate of Democrats, which Rachel and myself are a part of, and our slate of six, going out there as the forefront of the leadership providing national solutions. And when people get a sense that not only are we out there relentlessly going against this insane war drive policy and calling for the removal of Obama, but we are the only voice of reason that is actually presenting a real solution to this crisis and, you know, what is going to be required in terms of a policy solution that the population can rally behind, including what we're seeing in terms of the optimism that people are excited about what we're presenting with the development of the North American Water and Power Alliance. As well as what we're seeing with the development of the Arctic development and how these types of science driver programs for the nation, a mission for the nation, not only gives people a sense that, okay, well, they want to stop the war drive, but what's next? You know, what can we look forward to in the coming 2012 New Year period? What's going to be the shift in the thinking and direction for the nation? And that's what people are excited about, that we give them this sense of optimism that we as a nation, you know, as a species, can actually really turn the direction of mankind around by what we're presenting as a real alternative for them to, you know, for them to get behind.
Right. Well, Rachel, I saw you discuss the same kind of thing in a new presidency strategy panel. It's anyone listening should make sure they watch it. It was posted December 22nd on LPAC TV, and you and Diane Sayre and others were discussing that what Keisha was raising, your embodiment of leadership and mission at a time when no one trusts the existing institutions because of the collapse process and the profound evil corruption. No one trusts anything. So you come along and say what ought to be done, and it really resonates. Would you speak about that?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, that was another thing we did during the, you know, this week of action around Christmas. Was besides the rallies, we were also just full force trying to get back to every single person that had signed up in the recent period, and also hitting the institutions. Mm-hmm. So one thing we did was go to the Massachusetts State House, where, you know, before there's definitely, you know, the Boston Vault influence there, so sometimes they're, you know, kind of uptight.
Mm-hmm.
But recently what we've found is we go in and we walk in and we say we're here to discuss the impeachment of Obama and the imminent war threat. And we're actually sitting down and having meetings in pretty much every office.
Uh-huh.
So it's just another example. Diane gave an example of a intervention she did for to become a delegate for Obama for the Democratic Party. She called for his impeachment, and most people defended her right to be there. So that's you know, that's what we've been finding, is that even so-called corrupt, or, you know, even cowardice, even parts of the institutions that are afraid of what we're saying, they recognize the need for us to be there saying it.
Uh-huh.
So they're defending us and they're opening up their doors. And I think that, along with what we did over this recent period and slowing down the war drive, demonstrates the fact that what we're doing is the right thing, and that we've got to keep doing more of it. And keep the momentum, and that will push Obama out of office. It has the potential to do so.
In that regard, let me ask you again, Rachel. I think you had mentioned in this discussion with Diane Sayre, where you mentioned about Northern New Jersey and people's responsiveness to what we're doing, that cultural influences, you said something about their short-term, their longer-wave influences of culture, that we're reaching into people, we're touching people on this regard. Would you say what you meant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just that a lot of people think that their opinions are their own, but there's different influences that the people are born into, and there's different cultures that people are born into that influence their thinking without knowing it. And, yeah, so some of these are long-term, like, you know, a history of the nation you were born into, and then some of them are the short-term cultural, you know, aspects of your generation or your decade. And so what we've found is that calling out to these deeper things that are resonant in the population are successful. You're able to pull something out of them that's there, that's dormant, that wants to be activated if someone calls it out. And specifically, people have been responding to the attacks on NASA.
Okay.
And you find that people are really excited over science and creativity, and that when we when you bring up to them the option of of an economy that's based around human creativity, that's something that they've been, you know, sort of waiting for someone to say.
Keisha, do you want to add to that? Yeah, I know everything that you've done for years speaks to the same thing.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, the leadership that we're providing is an intervention of the institution of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes against this sense perceptual view of what people think about government. You know, my local government is going to do this for me. My local candidate in a district is going to do this or that for me because we're playing let's make a deal versus actually having leaders who will intervene with national policy into the institution of the presidency. And so what we're seeing right now about the commitment from the population to the space program, the commitment to NASA, to what we're providing right now to as far as the development of a national policy around reestablishing and bringing back the North American water and power lines, all of these things, you know, go against the whole hot button issue of thinking and politics. And it gives people a sense of that we're providing the real leadership that's going to give the nation a sense of mission to empower them to fight against this drive toward World War III that we're seeing. And so, yeah, I think it is the case that when people see us out there on the grounds and what we're doing with our website, everything that we represent, they're also looking at a long arc of history in terms of the leadership that Mr. LaRouche has provided and what we're continuing to do. For instance, to give an example, if you talk to the population, which we're doing right now around what is being provided as a cooperation from a plan of cooperation from Russia with this strategic defense of the Earth, of the Arctic development. People look at this and they see, you know, that what Mr. LaRouche represented back in the 1980s with the Strategic Defense Initiative, this is now being put on the table as an alternative to the policy toward war and what we can accomplish in terms of a development and a shift in the progress of mankind. So, you know, today, for instance, a report came out from China on their five-year development plan for space exploration. This is what we should be doing in the United States.
Yeah, they want to bring back soil from the moon. They have all these objectives, right?
Yes, and they're modeling their space program on what we accomplished and what we represented under President Kennedy in the Apollo mission and other types of programs that the United States set the tone and example for, mm-hmm. which our current president is shutting down and cutting the budget to. So this goes to show that what we're representing is something unique in the character of the United States and returning the population to that sense of what it means to be American, what is our patriotic mission, and why we have to actually fight to represent those principles of our American Republic and our American Constitution, which is now being just obliterated by this current president and by members of Congress who have decided that they're going to act against the Constitution instead of in interest of the Constitution. And the people realize that, and they are leaning toward our leadership that we're providing.
Right. I think there's there'll be another instance in the next 48 hours or so of President Obama signing this the Annual Defense Authorization Act that has in it unconstitutional elements. So there again is another instance. There are many of why this person needs to be got out of the White House as of yesterday. But you're saying then, Keisha, and Rachel was alluding to this, that people are starting to, instead of just taking this instance, that instance, but there's something more ineffable behind it all. They're understanding, or they're capable of responding when you put out the bigger picture. Is that right?
Absolutely. And they have a sense that we've been on the grounds doing this for years, and LaRouche has provided the leadership. We have a slate of candidates who continue to provide the leadership that they can actually rally behind because the leadership is being provided for the population to recognize that the thinking that has gotten us into the position that we're in, you know, going back to the assassination of President Kennedy, the rejection of real scientific principles, and this policy that has launched us into a drive toward thermonuclear World War III, is because the population has alluded to or has adopted a thinking that goes against their own interests. And so when we tell them that, the reality is struck onto them in terms of what they have to get behind as a real mission if we're going to stop this insane crime that we're seeing right now and get the population to focus on something that's going to be in their better interest, in the better interest of the nation.
Right. Well, and Rachel, apropos of what Keisha just said, you've posted a recent statement on the new presidency page on the LaRouchePac.com site. I think it was December 28th, and you called it something like "Don't Forget About Hyperinflation." And you used a lot of imagery that seemed to appeal to people, like what if we had a Mayflower II that could go north towards the Arctic? You were addressing that in the population that might get stuck in the idea of money values or hyperinflation. Would you comment on your points?
Mm-hmm. Yep. LaRouche wrote in his recent paper, and I thought it was appropriate. It's called The Strategic Situation Now. It's on the website, but that it's abominable that governments now still believe that they have to continue to bail the system out. And that there's nothing, that this debt that's in the European system is a cancer, and that as it's continuing, it's decreasing in value. That all they're doing by printing more money is by decreasing the value of the existing money. So it's a hyperinflationary process. And this was maybe more discussed more openly, a year or two ago, but recently it seems like it's sort of being taken for granted that we're going to continue hyperinflation. And so this is nuts, just like we would be nuts, to keep Obama in office. So I just pointed out this fact and said that, in the ghost of Alexander Hamilton, who specifically wrote on public credit and said, well, the only debt that should be allowed is that debt which is productive for your economy. So therefore, all of this worthless debt, this cancer that's out there, we need to just cut it off. And so the image I painted was of a ship, perhaps called the Mayflower II, with the ghost of Hamilton cutting off the $quadrillion of derivative debt, cutting it off the books of the United States, and allowing the United States to go to this potential development policy using the Arctic. And so this ship could be sailing into the icy shores of the Arctic region to build the largest dams ever built, which would be in the northern regions of NWAPA.
Right. Cut the tow line. That's for sure. It's or it'll sink us all. Well, in the as I said, we have a two-part program here. And in the final few minutes, though, I'd like to have any particular points stressed from you, spokesman for the national presidency slate, because of the new year ahead of us, a new opportunity. I mean, this isn't a calendar question, obviously. This is life and death for civilization. So, Keisha, I'm sure you want to call us to continue to act, and but in what would you care to leave us with as your thought?
Well, I just wrote a statement that you can find on the LaRouche blog that is entitled "Think Like General Washington, Give the Enemy a Surprise," and I think that that's what the population has to do. They have to, think in a way that goes against their sense perceptual views of thinking or what's practical. Because when General Washington on Christmas Day defeated the Hessian soldiers, knowing that the practical equipment and everything that they needed wasn't there, They did it because he did it because he understood the higher principle of the enemy that he was fighting. And that's what the population has to understand, that like General Washington, we have to be able to cross that river in our own mind of whatever may be holding us back from waging this fight. And I would just tell people just listening, whatever is holding them back, they have to muster the courage to get out there and let's fight this enemy by first and foremost stopping Obama in the White House by getting him out now. We're not waiting until 2012. Let's get Obama out before the new year, and let's give the nation a new direction and a new direction for and a mission for mankind that is going to be by destroying this British Empire. So that's what we can be doing, ringing in the new year of 2012 with that mission and accomplishment.
Well, thank you very much. Rachel, do you want to add an amen or say anything else?
Yeah, that was a really good way to say it. I'll just add that the potential around a new future is, it's not just something we've done before. That what the slate represents is a bipartisan leadership, type of leadership, is that it's that we're creating something which is not existing in either party, and it's also not existing in United States or human history. And that is appropriate because what we need right now is a big solution, is a step forward, not just a step back to break even. That's not enough. But we've got to go forward to something bigger and better than mankind has ever done before.
Well, thank you both very much, Keisha Rogers in Houston, Rachel Brown in Boston. And I wish you personally, and to mankind, a happy new year for all the reasons you both just said. And we'll continue next with Jeff Steinberg. And on this basis, best wishes to all for 2012. Thank you both.
Thank you.
And now we turn to Jeffrey Steinberg from EIR Counterintelligence. He's with me here in the studio. And in the second and concluding half of the program, he will give us a strategic update on the situation. Jeff, what we'd like to hear from you right now on the eve of 2012 is, would you bring out any particulars you think people mobilizing really need to know about yours and Mr. LaRouche's strategic evaluation of the dynamic for war and the potential for vanquishing the forces behind it?
Sure. Well, there's been a pretty impressive mobilization, not only of our organization, but of certain leading circles within the patriotic military establishment here in the United States. I would say military, intelligence, diplomatic establishment, but special emphasis on the military because they understand the consequences of a global war, particularly a war that will result in thermonuclear weapons being exchanged. This means the extinction of the planet. And so we've had a very significant intervention against the threat of a global war being triggered by an Israeli attack on Iran. Both Iran and Syria, as Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized as recently as his emergency address just before Christmas, are merely the local targets. The real objective is to engineer a global strategic confrontation between the United States on the one side and Russia and China on the other. And what's important, I think, and what is unique about Mr. LaRouche's role is that his understanding of the actual source of the war danger is quite unique. His focus is on the British Empire, and his evaluation is that we've now reached a breakpoint where the entire transatlantic and really by extension global financial and economic system is finished. And that system has been dominated by the British Empire, with very, very few exceptions, for centuries. And before we had the British Empire, we had earlier reflections of the same imperial and oligarchical principle. We had the Venetian Empire, we had the Byzantine Empire, and of course the original model was the Roman Empire. And you could even go back earlier to the time of the Peloponnesian Wars and the destruction of the Greek Republic. This oligarchical principle has been a dominant factor in world history, and we've reached one of those breakpoints where the entire oligarchical system is doomed. And so sitting in London, centered around things like the British monarchy, this British oligarchy is perfectly aware of the doom of their system. And they are prepared to unleash thermonuclear war in order to preserve their power. Now, you know, once you unleash thermonuclear war, the idea that anyone on this planet is going to survive is really a long shot at best. So there are undoubtedly even some elements within the radical Malthusian camp within the British oligarchy who have some hesitations about going forward. The idea that somehow or other you can make a clean break and say 6 billion people are doomed but not seven is a very risky proposition. I think Boccaccio in his Decameron really presented the folly of the Venetian oligarchy of the 14th century, who thought that they were immune from the Black Death and that they would somehow survive to preserve their system. So,
yeah, I think Edgar Allan Poe spoke about this as well, did he not?
Yes, absolutely.
The Mask of the Red Death.
Exactly. So we're at that kind of moment right now, and what Mr. LaRouche is uniquely focused on is the actual driving factor behind the war danger. It's not coming from Israel any more than it's coming from Obama in the White House. Obama at the White House, Netanyahu and Barack in Israel are captive pawns of this British oligarchical system. And in fact, you have sane elements in both Israel and the United States, again, especially people in the military and intelligence areas, who understand that to launch a war, a general war, through an Israeli attack on Iran at this point will not only virtually guarantee the doom, the destruction of Israel, but it will destroy human life on this planet for an unforeseeable period of time. So there are people who are actively mobilized and resisting, and who may be responding to the recognition of the war danger without understanding the operating forces that are ultimately driving this war danger. So it's a tricky proposition. Now, in the last several days, because the efforts on the part of our own organization and many of these military and other strategic circles, because of that effort, the war has been postponed. It hasn't been stopped, but it's been postponed. The original intention was probably to have an Israeli strike against Iran kick off this general war sometime during the early weeks of November. In fact, the execution of the former deposed Libyan dictator Gaddafi, once he was disarmed and in captivity, was not done to avoid the embarrassments of a trial. It was done because his illumination was necessary to keep the drive and the momentum for war. They hardly missed a beat in pushing for a no-fly zone, a humanitarian corridor, the overthrow militarily by outside force of Syrian President Bashar Assad using the Libya model. And Israel has been on a persistent drumbeat for a preventive attack against Iran since the summer. So this has been building up and building up. And the interventions, both here in the United States and in Israel, a very forceful intervention against this war has thrown a monkey wrench into the plans. The timing's been thrown off, and we've now entered a period where the disintegration of particularly the transatlantic financial system has reached a decisive breakpoint. We saw predicates of it last week when the European Central Bank lent 500 billion euros to the big European banks led by the InterAlpha Group. And those funds were supposed to be immediately used to buy up European sovereign debt to basically postpone, not solve, but simply postpone the European sovereign debt crisis. And there was some glimmer of hope that maybe some of those funds might even be lent out in some productive fashion. Well, the bank simply turned around, borrowed the money, and immediately redeposited it in the European Central Bank. Why? Because they're all hopelessly bankrupt. If anybody had a look at the real magnitude of the non-performing debt on the books of the banks, they'd all be shut down tomorrow morning. So they can't possibly engage in any kind of lending activity. They're using that money to plug up the holes. And so we're on the very precipice of a real hyperinflationary blowout. And so when you get into those kinds of conditions, if you have a European-wide situation like Weimar Germany in the autumn of 1923, it's very hard to get a war going when everybody is obsessed with the fact that money has vaporized. There's no buying power left in the existing currency. And Mr. LaRouche described this as a situation where you've got kind of two zeros. You have one prospect of a war danger that would destroy humanity. And you have another prospect, which is that even if you don't get a war, you have the prospect of a hyperinflationary blowout on a European-wide and very rapidly transatlantic scale, where it also now is intersecting with a dangerous global food shortage. And that food shortage can also mean mass famine and starvation for major parts of the globe. When you look at Prince Philip and others from the radical Malthusian, radical green oligarchical movement, they openly say they want to eliminate 6 billion out of 7 billion people presently alive on this planet. And they have the means at their disposal to do that, either through thermonuclear war, which runs the risk of everybody being exterminated and the oligarchy itself being wiped out. But you also now have this other ticking time bomb, which is a food collapse overlapping with a Weimar hyperinflation that could kick in at any moment. Now, there is a readily available solution to this. Back several months ago, Mr. LaRouche laid out a 7-point recovery plan. And step number one in that recovery plan is that British agent Barack Obama must be removed from office using constitutionally available means, and it's got to happen yesterday. It's got to happen right away, because so long as Obama is credibly in office as president, let's say, for example, if Vice President Biden, in consultation with the cabinet, were to invoke Section 4 of the 25th Amendment and basically say that President Obama is no longer mentally fit to serve as President of the United States, under those circumstances, undoubtedly Obama would challenge it, would fight back. There'd be all kinds of moves that would be made, desperate moves by the British on behalf of Obama. But Obama's capacity to function effectively as the president would be eliminated. So an impeachment proceeding, it should have happened already. there were a series of impeachable crimes, high crimes and misdemeanors against the U.S. Constitution that Obama has already committed. You could go back all the way to Obamacare, which was a Nazi euthanasia policy, completely against the Constitution's general welfare clause. Then you've got much more immediate and obvious things. He went to war in Libya, not from behind, but the United States led that war effort. And he flaunted the fact that he refused to go to Congress. That is an impeachable crime because only the Congress, under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, has the authority to declare war. The president is the commander-in-chief, but he needs the permission of Congress to bring this nation to war. And he basically spat in the face of Congress and ripped up the Constitution with what he did there. He's carried out at least three known extrajudicial executions of American citizens, starting with Anwar al-Awlaki, his son, and another American citizen who was traveling with al-Awlaki, the father, when he was killed by an American drone in Yemen. There's the execution of Gaddafi, which was a flagrant violation of the Geneva Convention. There are other crimes, the most recent being the order for the military to engage in indefinite detentions of American citizens on American soil without due process.
Yeah, I understand to sign that in the next 48 hours, perhaps.
The deadline is Monday, the 2nd of January, to sign it. And the president is going to issue a signing statement along with it. But we know the White House insisted that the National Defense Authorization Act have that section that did not exempt American citizens or legitimate residents of the United States from indefinite detentions by the military. These are all abominations, and they go beyond even the worst things that were done by Bush and Cheney. So unless Obama is removed from office, all of the remedies that are otherwise available, starting with the immediate reinstatement of Glass-Steagall, break up the banks, go back to commercial banking, saddle Wall Street with all of their gambling debts, and they will go under immediately. Launch great projects through federal credit, such as NWAPA. We have a major agricultural crisis worldwide. We can do a great deal to address that issue immediately. In other words, there's no shortage of solutions, but they all require the political will, particularly of the presidency. And as long as Obama, a British agent and a rabid narcissist, is in office, none of these things will happen. And so the war danger persists as long as Obama is in office. If we succeed in defeating the war danger by pushing it back and pushing it back to the point that it's no longer feasible, then we're facing the equally devastating threat of a global disintegration into a dark age of chaos, starvation, and you name it, the kind of Weimar hyperinflation on a global scale.
Right. And I think the lever in this situation, because there's tremendous amount that you've described, we can leverage this, is individual action. People can. The last time you were on this show, Jeff, I think you or colleagues had interviewed retired Commander Joseph Hoare. Since then, Colonel Larry Wilkerson has been interviewed. I'm speaking about in Executive Intelligence Review. This is being picked up around the world. The statements of these particular gentlemen and others from military circles. So I just stress that people here, as we turn to a new year, don't make any mistake that it can be the individual's action of circulating and pressuring and whatever it takes. Everyone make their own decision or about what specifics you can do. But this can turn around. This can be done. There's no question about it. And there's no other recourse either. One thing I'd like to do in the remaining minutes is, again, you mentioned a couple things right at the beginning. the real target being the those who would go ahead for mankind, Russia, China, who've been indicating they want they moves for Arctic development, moves for collaborative Eastern Eurasia development, you know, and we should be in on that. That's the American legacy that's being blocked out of London and out of the Obama White House. But they, again, to stress to people, just summarize the way some of the response is coming out of Russia, because the year ends with a couple of meetings. There was the European Union-Russia meeting, there was the NATO-Russia meeting, and leaders, Medvedev and others, have stressed that they, the war danger, in fact, they've redeployed their forces.
Well, look, I think it's important to just understand from a conceptual framework the oligarchical principle. The oligarchy never fights its own wars. The objective of the British Empire is to, as they did in the run-up to World War I and the run-up to World War II, is to create the conditions where others are induced to fight wars. And in this particular case, the crucial strategic priority has been to assure that there's no possibility of a realization of what Lyndon LaRouche has been promoting for years, namely a three-power, four-power alliance of the world's great powers, the United States, Russia, China, and India. India, 1.1 billion people, China, 1.4 billion, Russia, a great and vast Eurasia power, a former superpower, and of course the United States. If you get these countries aligned together around an American system approach to global development, as we had at the end of the 19th century, the British were driven to start World War I because they were afraid of the fact that the American system was being spread around the globe. We had Germany under Bismarck. We had Russia during the period of Mendeleev and Vita, the building of the Trans-Siberian Railroad. We had the Meiji Restoration in Japan. We had the education of Sun Yat-sen in China by American missionaries. These ideas, these Hamiltonian economics ideas, and particularly the building of long-distance railroad links to link up Eurasia, Africa, and the Western Hemisphere, these ideas were moving forward at breakneck speed at the end of the 19th century, and Prince Edward Albert, later King Edward VII, engineered a series of regional wars to manipulate one country against another, particularly after they forced Bismarck out of power in Germany. And this is what we're seeing right now. LaRouche said the United States, Russia, China, India allied together in a cooperative agreement around global economic development can destroy, can ultimately defeat in absolute terms, the British Empire. The British response, start World War III, pitting the United States against Russia and China. And with Obama in as president, this is exactly what's going on. The Russians are absolutely cognizant that there have been dramatic changes, policy changes, moving the world towards global thermonuclear confrontation. And they've all been taken at the initiative of President Obama under British orders. The sudden shutdown of the negotiations around a joint anti-ballistic missile program for southern Europe.
Right.
And suddenly, the United States is moving ahead unilaterally in a way that directly threatens Russia. China knows after Obama's recent Asia trip, where he was in Hawaii and then in Bali.
It was a gunboat trip like the old days.
Absolutely. Straight gunboat diplomacy. Marines are going to be based at Darwin in northern Australia, right near the South China Sea. A declaration of de facto war. And so Iran and Syria are targets as triggers, as detonators. But the ultimate targets are Russia and China. And Russia and China, frankly, both understand this. And each in their own way, they are making very loud warning noises and are preparing physically, militarily, in the event that such an attack actually happens. We are literally talking about a danger of global thermonuclear war, despite the fact that nobody in Russia, nobody in China, nobody in their right mind outside of some residents of the White House here in the United States wants a global thermonuclear war. It's the destruction of humanity, perhaps forever. So this is the British policy. It's the oligarchical principle playing out. And if more people understand that this is what we're dealing with, that we're dealing with a London-centered problem, not a problem coming out of Tel Aviv or Washington, those are the pawns that are being moved around by the British to get something going that is in the interests of no one whatsoever. It's the old idea of après-moi le déluge. If the British can't retain power, then they don't want humanity to survive.
And, you know, Jeff, if it weren't so in an epic way tragic, some of this, like the made-in-London quality of the specifics, for example, in Syria, are amazing. There has come out what to do in Syria, a white paper out of several agencies in London.
Right.
It's like Groucho Marx, you know, that there are characters that are fabricated to be apparent leaders of the...
Absolutely.
And so this is... So again, it means the potential, if individuals act and make this known and appreciate the real stakes here, we can get results.
Yeah, the British policy right now is either they get their big thermonuclear war, in which case they're going for the obliteration of 6 billion people, and it ain't going to stop there. They ain't going to survive that. And then their, quote, fallback option, their plan B, which they've been working on aggressively, is to start a new 100 years religious war within the Islamic world, which stretches from the northern Caucasus region in southern Russia all the way to the Chinese Xinjiang province, Central Asia, Afghanistan, Pakistan, everything in between. And down into Africa.
Yeah, into southern Sudan.
A Sunni versus Shiite internal war within Islam, a war between Islam and Christianity. The British have written the book or have studied the earlier imperial traditions of religious war as a form of control by the oligarchy. And that is what they're pushing right now. That's what's going on in Syria. That's what is going on throughout this entire region, the concept of a war between the Sunni Arab states of the Persian Gulf, led by Saudi Arabia, which is in full lockstep with the British, versus Shia Iran. That's what they're playing for. Persians versus Arabs, Jews and Christians versus Muslims. They're going for a vast religious war as their fallback option plan B if we succeed in stopping the thermonuclear bombs from being sent off.
Well, we'll take a deep breath, and I'm going to thank you for laying out the stakes and laying out the opportunities, because we welcome being human, and that means we're going to succeed in against this. And with that, Jeff, I'm so glad you could be here on our last program, December 31st, 2011 of the old year. And we look forward to a very successful, wonderful post-Obama new year, 2012.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thanks, Marsh.
Thank you very much. So this is the end of our program, December 31st. Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you.